You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk. Entrepreneur Corner.
7 minutes after 11, and it is the first edition of the Entrepreneur Corner for 2018. Last year, we had great fun in this particular slot, and of course, some incredible young entrepreneurs that we had profiled, and many of them going from good to great, some of them still struggling. That's the life of an entrepreneur. And we hope to do the same this year as well. And we always talk about entrepreneurship as incredibly important, particularly given low economic growth and low unemployment figures in this country. And we need more of you, more of us, to really become masters of your own destiny and hopefully become captains of industry, and you can help to employ other people. And so we're going to have an open line for the next half an hour or so, and you can call in and get as much advice as you want to ask our founder and CEO of RaiseCore, and also author of two best-selling books, Lose the Business Plan and What to Do When You Want to Give Up. Familiar voice on this platform, Alon Reyes. Alon, it's lovely meeting you again.
Yes.
For the second time. We'd met a couple of years ago, and having you on the show, in fact, for the first time. Thanks so much for coming in.
And thanks for having me.
Just in general, you know, we've got such incredible public commitment at the rhetorical level to entrepreneurship in this country. But are we actually putting our money where our mouths are from a point of view of taking entrepreneurship seriously in our schools, encouraging people to think of it? We have now, for example, this bun fight about how to deal with access to higher education country. And part of the reason why there's so much desperation on the part of young people to get into universities is because people think the only way I can be economically self-sufficient is if I get a university degree. We don't take seriously, it seems to me, in practice, the possibility of becoming an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I think the important words there were the lip service and what's really going on practically. Because if you look at entrepreneurship in South Africa, you will the GEM report, which is the Global Entrepreneurship Monitor, will give you a statistic, depending on the year, anywhere between 4% and 7% of our population is what they call entrepreneurially active. And when you compare that, in fact, ironically, to the first world, okay, it's a much lower rate. It's around 1%, 1% to 2%.
Yes.
So we're sitting much higher as a percentage. But then you look at what is this thing called an entrepreneur and how do we define entrepreneurship? And I think that's a very important thing. So the first thing is to understand there is no such thing as an entrepreneur. When you look at what they call the psychological typology of an entrepreneur, in other words, what makes up an entrepreneur in terms of their characteristics, they come from wealthy backgrounds, poor backgrounds, they're extroverts, they're introverts, they're tall, they're short, you know, they've got all sorts of characteristics, and you cannot define them as such. But the more important definition are we talking about survivalists? Okay. Are we talking about lifestylists or are we talking about growth entrepreneurs? And that's the more important question. And in our definition of our government doing lots of work towards entrepreneurship, my contention is that we're counting all those three types into one globular thing called entrepreneurs. And that's the problem, is because when we talk about the contribution to the economy, everyone is important. There's not one more important than the other, but one certainly contributes more to employment and to taxes and to driving the economy forward.
Okay, so let's go through those three types again.
So there's survivalist, okay? So and these are all defined, ironically, and there's an irony to this. I'll tell you that afterwards. There's a survivalist, too, which is defined by their growth. It's the one-man band making ends meet or not every single month. Okay. There's a lifestylist, generally 3 to 4 man band, and often a family business, small growth, and then there is the growth entrepreneur, which is all about growing that business as big as you can before you die.
Okay. But it seems to me, and I shouldn't even say it seems to me, are we scaffolding any of these three types at all?
Yeah,
so they all seem to be in need of some assistance from big business and from society, right?
Yes.
Even though, at least in terms of the public discussion, the obsession is obviously with the growth entrepreneur. That's what we have in mind, I think.
Yes, that's what it should be. But in fact, when you look at what's really going on, there are these, you know, where we report 10,000 people went through this program or that program. A weekend course You know, entrepreneurs are not two-minute noodles. You know, you can't go on a course over a weekend and you pop out as an entrepreneur. It just doesn't happen that way. And when your mental model is that you come in, anyone can come in, and you go through some training and you come out as an entrepreneur, I think that is fundamentally where the problem lies.
Okay. There seems to be disagreement between you business authors on what is required in terms of that process of sharpening someone's prospects of becoming an entrepreneur, any of the three types you're talking about. Some people will say you need to sit down and actually think very carefully about your business plan before you even come to me as a potential investor or go to a bank for a loan. You need to have that done in a very solid kind of way. And there are various templates all over the internet these days that can help you with that. And then there are mavericks that suggest that, in fact, some of the orthodox thinking about these steps, necessary steps you have to go through, including drawing up torturous business plans in relation to some granular template on the internet, that in fact is not the way forward. Where do you situate yourself in terms of that debate?
The latter, and that's why I wrote the book, Lose the Business Plan, because to me, all business plans look exactly the same. You start off in year one, you need lots of money. Then you need a bit more in year two. In year three, you're going to make lots and lots of money. It's always a J curve. It doesn't matter. You know, I see thousands of these documents, and they all have that same J curve. In year three, I'm going to make money. And yet 96% of businesses fail within a 10-year period, most of them in the first 2 years. So you cannot be assessing whether a business will succeed from a business plan. So I'm not saying don't do the business plan. I'm saying that it is not a determinant of success or failure. Okay, and that's the problem. When we're investing in entrepreneurs, we should be investing in character. But Eusebius, I think, you know, and I want to sort of preempt this, because there's another big question in entrepreneurship, which is around whether entrepreneurs are born or made. Mm. Okay, it's a wrong question. In about 10 years ago, there was a piece of research that showed the most successful first-time entrepreneurs ever in the U.S. were 60 years and over. And that sort of broke the question, because if you're 60 and above, you certainly weren't born an entrepreneur, and you've probably been working at a corporate somewhere, and so you weren't made an entrepreneur. So it breaks the question, are you born or made? Entrepreneurs precipitate when the conditions are right. And in my opinion, there are five conditions that need to be present. And if government understands these conditions and tries to create these conditions, they will then encourage more entrepreneurship.
Okay. So if you want to ask a question of Alon, give us a call, maybe an entrepreneur with a very practical problem, we can do that. Or if you want to dip into some of these debates about whether or not it should be business unusual in how you map out your entrepreneurial journey and maybe start by not mapping it out, give us a call on 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Can we then flip the question on its head before we take a break? If we are mistaken to think that some aesthetically beautiful little dot called my business plan with a J-curve is going to be the silver bullet to make sure that in year three I have these incredible cash flows coming through the business, and it doesn't happen. It then begs the obvious question, what are the genuine determinants of success that in fact is not part of folklore?
I'll give you some weird ones, because just to spice it up, father issues.
What?
Yeah, father issues. If you have a father issue, there's two psychologists, Collins and Moore, that show that if you have father issues, you're far more likely to be a successful entrepreneur. Okay? And if you have an overdoting mother in combination, it's like the perfect thing. There's a whole piece of research called the deviance route to entrepreneurship, which shows that that entrepreneurs, like if you play sport that is team sport, you're less likely to be an entrepreneur. If you play solitary sport or solo sport like tennis or whatever, you're more likely to become an entrepreneur. If you've smoked before the age of 14, you're more likely to be an entrepreneur. There's a whole bunch of really...
And why is that? Is that for the obvious intuitive reason that you are kind of anti-establishment and sticking the middle finger up to cohesion and...
Correct.
Yeah.
That is exactly what it is. ADHD, if you go and research ADHD and or ADD and entrepreneurship, you'll see a massive correlation between entrepreneurs and ADD or ADHD. And that is because in the beginning parts of your journey, you have to be doing everything, and it really folds in nicely to an ADD kind of personality, where you can't do one thing for a long period of time. You have to keep moving, and that's, you know, that's the, well, that's the theory anyway.
Okay.
So there are lots of weird and wonderful things.
17 minutes after 11, we're going to take a break and then take a couple of your calls. I do also want to ask him about some of the dominant challenges that you have written to us about over the last year as we had this feature. And while some of these questions about college and research suggest the truth is in terms of what correlates with successful entrepreneurship, I know that many of you have ideas and you care about practical questions such as, how do I access, for example, credits? What do I say to a bank that doesn't want to take a chance on me because I don't have any collateral? I'm going to ask Alon whether those issues are also a big determinants, and how do we deal with those when there's so much structural prejudice, particularly in the banking and the finance sector in this country, against many, many people with good ideas but who don't necessarily have any sort of guarantees for how they might repay a big loan, for example. 18 minutes after 11, Tepo and Roger, I'm going to take your calls on the other side of this.
702 and Cape Talk, Entrepreneur Corner.
We're having a conversation with Alon Race, and I'm enjoying his insights. I love people who think in unorthodox ways about what is supposed to be, common knowledge in relation to topics like entrepreneurship, and turns out not to be the case if you look at interesting, particular experimental psychology. Seppo, good morning to you.
Morning, UCBS. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Go ahead, sir. You can engage Alon directly.
Yeah, Alon, I wanted to know, I have a business here in Rustenburg, so I wanted to scale it up. Now I realize that I need systems. I need proper systems like for your procurement and logistics. So I wanted to know, is there anyone, like a consultant that I can, someone I can consult to help with this expansion thing? So how do you go about doing the setting up systems rather?
Okay, Tepo, thanks for your question. I think what's more important before you get assistance is to ask the question, why do you need to get assistance? And are you abdicating your responsibility as an entrepreneur first? And I'm not judging where you are, so I don't have enough information, but generally what happens is when people ask for assistance, it's one for one of two reasons. The first is that they actually have tried everything and now need assistance. So they've gone through the process and they've come to the conclusion that they do not have that capability right now, and I underline right now. And the second is to abdicate the responsibility. I want somebody else to do it. So before you ask for assistance, the question, the honest question, and I don't want you to answer it on air, is which one of the two is that? If it is the fact that you've gone through the process of trying and then and have come to the conclusion that you don't have the requisite skills and need that support, then there are organizations. In fact, I have an operation in Rustenburg. I'm not that advertised, but there are many others as well in Rustenburg where you just go into Google and you'll find what the business development service providers within your town or city.
Okay, we've actually lost it. Can't answer those questions if you wanted to. Roger, good morning.
Morning, Vesuvius. Yeah, I agree with Alon where he mentioned that a lot of entrepreneurs started from the age of 60 and above. And this is very true, because when a guy retires, you know, he's got that excitement, he's got that energy in him, and he doesn't want to sit around twiddling his thumbs. And then he starts thinking, okay, now I've got the time, now I can do what I've always wanted to do. I mean, myself, I've made about five people multi-millionaires just by suggestion, and I've helped. I mean, look, I was actually the master brain behind The Apprentice as well. I made Donald Trump probably about $800 million richer. I suggested the Rolex Awards for Enterprise to Andre Heiniger. I've done a lot of things, but this country doesn't seem to acknowledge my intelligence, you know? I mean, I grew up with Bruce Candy. And I mean, Bruce Candy, Elon Musk, and Mark Shuttleworth, they all left this country because they could see this country doesn't support entrepreneurs. And, you know, there's so much that we can do. I mean, we could establish the JRNCA, the Job Research and Creation Association. And I mean, that's what we need. We need people like myself to get together and jackstart the South African economy. And I mean, people
Roger, can I stop you there?
Yeah?
Which applies to you, A or B? A, doting mother, or B, daddy issues?
That's a good one, eh? But you know, I still want to meet up with Bruce. You know, Bruce Romanzi, because him and I will make a good pair. I'm telling you.
I want to take a general sentiment out of Roger's call, and I want you to comment on it. I'm not an entrepreneur, so I particularly love when you delve into the psychology aspects of it. But as with Tsepo, there is a part of this conversation that is truly about the nuts and bolts. Mm. If no one is going to invest in an idea that I have, then sometimes I go to the States and then I get recognized for my entrepreneurial potential, and then I'll come back to this country. So in between everything else that Roger is saying, there's a truth there. I mean, the worst example here, not the worst, a good bad example, is someone like Siya Khusa. The boy had to go to the States and have a small planet named after him for inventing rocket fuel for NASA before he became a household name in South Africa, and now is an incredible entrepreneur with an eye on innovation as well with his kind of talent. That should have been spotted off the back. There is something in our society that doesn't quite get right the level of scaffolding that entrepreneurs need.
Yeah. First of all, I want to agree with that. And then I want to talk about maybe a little angle to that, which is that in order for a business to succeed, you need a compelling economic right to exist, what I call certi, okay, not money. And part of a compelling economic right to exist is a market, okay? So if what you are doing, the value that you're providing, does not have a market locally, and there is a bigger market or more profitable market elsewhere, you'd be in your right mind to go and pursue a different market. But you have to align your compelling economic right to exist with a market that is prepared to pay for the product or service that you're providing at a profit.
Okay, makes sense. Let's go to Mafeking. Lindy, hello.
Hi, yes. Thank you for my call. I'd like to ask the difference between like a traditional entrepreneur and a social entrepreneur. I just really don't understand what to be differentiated, because whether or not I'm starting a recycling project to solve a social problem, and whether I'm selling fish and chips, it's the same thing. It's we're all making profit at the end of the day, and I just really don't understand where the traditional thinking or the psychology around that actually.
I'm gonna make lots of enemies here, because I totally 100% agree with you. And in fact, I was nominated a number of years ago as Social Entrepreneur of the Year, and I really said that I'm not a social entrepreneur, and there is no such thing as a social entrepreneur. All entrepreneurship is a social good. Ask the people when a bank retrenches 3,000 people, ask those 3,000 people if it was there was a social good in terms of coming to work or not. So I 100% agree with you. And when you get social entrepreneurs who very often are NGOs by a different name, or people who have latched onto this language called social entrepreneurship. To me, the most important thing is that you create value at a profit. Whether you call that profit surplus and reinvest it, well, that might be a social. But you cannot be building a sustainable social enterprise, and that's a better word, without the fact that you focus on creating value at a surplus or profit. You call it what you like, but you have to be creating that surplus, and then what you do with it is your prerogative.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's take a couple more calls. We've got so many people who want to speak to you. Can I hijack you for another 10 minutes, or do you need to go and make money?
No, I'm still on leave. I'm writing a book.
Okay, you can, exactly. Think of this as social entrepreneurship. Yeah. Shannon, how's it?
Yes, I'm good. How are you?
Never been better.
Good, good.
Okay,
am
Shannon, you live on air, buddy.
Perfect. I just got one comment. I started being an entrepreneur 3 years ago, and I'm based in Edenvale, and I walk dogs. And the only thing that I feel differentiates me is persistence. Just carrying on and believing that I can do it, and meeting people, and just, I'm not the smartest, I'm not the cleverest, but just having that drive to succeed. And that differentiates most entrepreneurs. Just having an idea and sticking to it and learning as you go.
I would agree with that, that that is one of the most important characteristics of entrepreneur, but it has to come in combination with the model that is a profitable model. Because you can be very persistent in terms of, you know, turning 1 rand into 80 cents. So if you don't have the model right, and this is what I'm taking nothing away from your persistence. I'm just saying in combination with the right model where you can turn 1 rand into 2 rand and not 1 rand into 80 cents. And what I find when I speak to entrepreneurs who have been working at their businesses for years and years is that when you look at what the problem is, it's nothing to do with their persistence. It's got to do with that they haven't thought through their model correctly.
What is your model in a nutshell, Shannon?
My model is dog walking. I've done it for 3 years and learned about what my clients need.
Okay, hold on. Let's do this. I'm going to put you on hold, Shannon. Please don't go away because I think your story is very instructive. Dog walking is the activity. I don't think that's what Alon has in mind with the word model, but maybe we can help a lot of people by just puzzling through your example on the other side of this.
702 and Cape Talk, Entrepreneur Corner.
Okay, Alon, speak to Shannon there.
All right, Shannon,
yes,
are you still there?
Still, yeah.
All right, great. So that's, as your CPS was saying, that's not the model. That's the business that you do is dog walking. But the model is more important.
Yeah.
So let me ask a couple of questions first. So the first question is, how many dogs do you walk at a time?
At a time, well, it depends on the clients. I find that dogs are normally bred for protection, so it's difficult to join dogs together. But what we've been doing and learning is on a there's a park down the road from us, and we've been bringing our dogs together to meet each other on a neutral platform.
So do you have staff? Do you have other people that are walking the dogs for you?
That's what we're gonna do this year. We're developing our model to incorporate people to walk the dogs.
And I just need to get through a couple of questions to get through the model. So you're generally doing one dog at a time?
Correct.
How long do you walk the dog for?
Half an hour.
Okay. How long does it take you to get to your client?
10 minutes. I'm based around Edenvale, Bedfordview, and my clients are within a K or two of each other.
How much do you charge for the half an hour?
75 rand per dog, and then 25 rand per additional dog.
Okay, so 75. Your average client has one dog or more.
Average client has between 1, 2 to 3 dogs. It just depends. Most have two.
All right, so let's work on two average. So that's 100 rand for two dogs. Is that correct? 75 plus the 25
correct.
For the additional, right? And you're saying that
correct.
you think you're earning 100 Rand an hour, earning 50 Rand an hour because it takes you 15 minutes to get there and back. And then there's the cost of the petrol and et cetera, et cetera. So you're working for 50 Rand an hour. If you had to employ somebody, what would you pay them per hour?
For half an hour, 50 Rand.
Okay. So you're going to make.
That's what I was working on.
So you'd pay them 50 rand, but I've just explained to you that's what you, because you take. Remember, 15 minutes to get there, which is where most entrepreneurs don't get the in order to create the business, there's time allocated. So 15 minutes.
Okay.
15 minutes. So 50. You get
my model was to introduce products. That's where I believe my cash flow come from. I've seen a lot of people buy biscuits. I know that the dog walking, I can employ people to earn a living, but I won't be able to earn a lot off employing. I thought the future of my business would be to grow the dog walking and then get clients to buy products from me.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what margin you could charge for that convenience. I don't know your industry. But if I look at the model, and the first thing is that you're selling time. So that's what really you're selling time at a certain rate per hour. Okay. Even if it's half hour, it's a certain rate per hour. You have to consider the time to get to client, the time to get back to client. And you also have to consider how often you can do it. And for example, when people go on leave in December, does your business shut down over December? Does it shut down in June? Are there different cycles and can you withstand the cycles within the industry? And what else could you be doing in that time? That's what I'm talking about is the model. You have to design the model as opposed to just say, I just charge $100 for two dogs to take them for a walk. That's what I'm talking about, creating the model.
Go to Lakeside. Fred, welcome to the show.
Yeah, good day to you, Eusebius. Listen, man, I've been listening to part of your show, and it's exactly the show that I should have been listening to from the start. The thing that I wanted to ask is, you know, how do I go about certain things? I know what to do because I'm a qualified woodworker, cabinet maker. I've been on my own for 33 years from 1970 to 2003. But of course, since the business went down and I had to sell up and that sort of thing, but today I'm a pensioner, I'm 79 years old. But I still have a lot of guts in me and strength to work. In actual fact, I do work part-time. But now, you know, I'd like to go on my own so that I can make money and leave a legacy. So how do I do that if you don't have any property, you know, or money to subsidize that?
Okay, I just want to take away the this false myth about needing money to start a business. You do not need money to start a business. You need a compelling economic right to exist. Money will follow profit. As soon as you show that there is a market that you can service and you can service at a profit, okay, and that you have that ability to do so on an ongoing basis, and the model is correct, that will, as to the previous, as to Shannon's example, where that it doesn't shut down in December and June because there's no model. The whole model works. Money will flow. And across the world, the most prolific form of financing for entrepreneurs is friends, fools, and family. That is the most prolific source of funding. It's how I started my business, with credit cards and borrowing money from friends. And that's how I started. And that's how, if you look at the majority of businesses globally, that's how they actually start. To get formal finance is an anomaly, and most people go there and then they focus on that and not on the business idea and building the right model. And what I'd like to say to you, Fred, is that you need to focus on what is it that I'm selling, what value does it add to whom, and if I sell it, and do I have the ability to sell it, and if I do sell it, can I make a profit? Once you've answered that, then you can start.
Okay, Alon, there's a complication here, right, that I want to both challenge you on, but also ask you advice on. But I think maybe this is a good entry into the next time you come on the show. I like the plain speaking, but isn't the more precise way of putting it, not that you don't need money, but that you don't need as much money as people imagine that they do? Because
yes,
to have a credit card, to have Eusebius as a buddy who might lend you some money,
yes,
to start a Lane Corpse,
yeah,
you still need a certain amount of social capital that allows you to access a friend or a family member that has the money.
Yes.
To have an uncle that is, I don't know, working at Investec, even though mom and dad at home might be unemployed, means that that is someone who can help you out with a few cents, at least give you access to maybe a free room in a building downtown where you don't have to pay rent. But that requires at least a certain kind of social capital that you can then access.
Correct.
To keep the cost down of your cost structure.
Correct.
But in our country, the reality, of course, is that with deep income inequality, some people will not even be able to have a buddy they can rely on as the fool or as the friend in the fools and friends formula that you're talking about.
So are we
then clear that we're not speaking to those people today in the world of 702 and Cape Talk? But there's also presumably a bunch of folks there who potentially could become serious entrepreneurs or even survivalists, but for the fact that they don't even have minimal capital.
So I'm going to answer it in this way, because I'm feeling like I'm being led in a certain direction. But let me go. So I would agree with you that the concept of not needing money, you're right. You do need money, but not as much. But also not when. I think the when is also important, because a lot of people wait,
okay,
for the money before they,
sure,
start. And so to me, what I'm saying is that when you get the compelling economic right to exist, in other words, you create the value, you create the value of the concept of the value, money will flow.
Mm.
And I operate across Africa. We operate in Angola, operate in deep rural Tanzania, and there's the same social capital issues that we have here. And yet money finds its way to where there is deemed profit, because people then will start to believe in this young entrepreneur and start to fund them. They will find the money.
You've been awesome. I hope that you will come on the show again. Alon, I love what you're doing, love your passion and plain speaking. Thanks so much for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me.